laid back.
With my mind on my money and my money on my mind.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Stucky here for episode 2 of Degen and Juice. This is actually part 1 of week 4. I'm here with Colin Wilson, as always. What's going on, Colin?
Week 4, can you believe it? I can't believe it's happened so fast.
Yeah, it's flying by. What are you up to? Are you still in Montreal? Are you back home?
I'm back home in the great state of Oklahoma, where you have to pay for pay-per-view to watch the Sooners score 21 in the fourth quarter. I'm sweating out a Giants ticket. Canadian bound, Texas bound, A&M later this weekend. Got all kinds of things going on.
Yep, I've been sweating the same Giants ticket, which looks completely dead. Brandon Marshall just dropped a wide open pass, and then they punted it, missed 5 tackles, and the Lions returned it. This game has been complete incompetence from the Giants. I mean, they holding on first and goal at the 1 leads to 3 points. I hate that Caldwell gets away with kicking a 58-yard field goal with 30 seconds left in the half with all of the momentum outdoors. I don't care if you have Prater, and it bounces off the crossbar and in. You miss that field goal. You give the Giants the ball at midfield with 30 seconds left and a chance to get all the momentum back. But this bet looks dead. How was your weekend overall?
You know, we clipped just above 500 on things that were tracked and things that were played. So, it's a good weekend. I'll take it, put it in the pocket, and, you know, it's more information. Finally, that we're like a month into the season almost, I can start actually paying attention to things like yards per play and stuff rate and adjusted sack rates, and I can actually start using real math and apply it to games now that we've got a sample set.
Yeah, I actually pulled a winning weekend out of my ass in college football. Another good weekend in NFL outside of the super contest, which you botched a little bit out of panic, but we'll get over it. Two and three we can recover from.
A little? I botched it a lot. How sharp do you think you are when you think that the Saints can cover on Belichick off of, you know, extra time, Belichick off of a loss? I fall for this shit every year. There's one time a year where I do something really stupid.
Yeah, for context, like Colin went against we agreed earlier in the week on the Titans, and last minute putting in the picks, he switched to the Jags, and then he told me, and I was like, what? But we'll get through it. It's not an 0-5. It's not a 1-4. So we'll have to come back strong next week in the Super Contest. I can tell you one pick that I love for the Super Contest is fading my boys who are – buy low, sell high candidate is the Jags and the Ravens, you know, who are 2-0. Their defense looks great. My favorite stat is they have 9 interceptions and their 8 interceptions, and their receivers have 9 total catches. So their defense is one less catch than all of their receivers combined through 2 games. But yeah, they lost
No, I was going to say, and you got to mention your line, what happened with Yanda.
Yeah, I mean, probably, you know, one of the top 3 interior offensive linemen in football done for the year. Just an absolutely devastating loss. One of 3 or 4 guys that the Ravens just couldn't afford to lose. And now you're going against the Jacksonville team, which has a really solid defensive line. You're traveling, you know, to London. They have the Steelers on deck at home, you know, with revenge from late last year. And it's always a huge rivalry game anyway, just a terrible spot for the Ravens. So, you know, I think catching 4, and I think the under, I don't even know who scores in that game. It's probably like 13-10, another ugly NFL game. But I think that's definitely one. Do you have a candidate that
you're
pretty confident in?
Yeah, don't forget there's always Bortles garbage time, which is good for 7 to 13 points in the fourth quarter. Yeah, So a little shout out to Cheetah. Cheetah and I are running. We're in the Super Contest Gold together. We have an entry, and I think we are a half point off the lead out of 93 entries for like $500,000. And we're 7-2-1. And I think I got my mind made up that the Bills are going to go in this week as my entry against the Broncos, because it's just a great spot up there in Buffalo, and Denver's coming off of week 1. You know, week 1, week 2, where, you know, they just annihilated the Cowboys. And, you know, I'll take as much as I can get. I don't care that it went from 2.5 to 3. I hope I get 3.5 by the time they freeze lines. But I love the Bills in this spot.
Yep, I would agree. And, I grabbed 3. And if it gets to 4, I'll grab more. Mm-hmm. Curious, just on a non-sports topic, are you any TV shows you're watching right now?
Well, I mean, traveling as much as I do, I have to download so much shit to my iPad because there's a lot of flying going on. So, you know, Game of Thrones is over. I'm a big GOT guy, but I don't talk about it on Twitter because there's a lot of GOT hate out there. And then sometimes you and I have been going back the last 3 years on Saul. I love Saul, and that was all a derivative of Breaking Bad. But and my favorite show, which is right now, is Westworld, is on hiatus for like another 6 months or so. So right now I'm prepping up for Survivor. And the reason why I mention it on this podcast is because, well, I've loved the show forever, but the reason I'm going to watch it this year intensely is because they've divided the group up into three groups, which is healers, heroes, and hustlers. And you could just take a guess at which one I'm rooting for from the top, which is the group of hustlers, which are supposed to be known for their work ethic and, you know, taking what they can get when they're looking at, you know, a craps table. So I'm going for the hustlers in Survivor.
I would make fun of you, but I'm currently and always have watched Big Brother, huge Big Brother fan. It's actually like, it's awesome game theory, and it's like a real, it's not, you know, these bullshit reality shows where, you know, it's completely scripted. It's my guilty pleasure, Big Brother, so I can't make fun of you. I've never watched Survivor, but I can't.
Yeah, there's some crossover, like the Caleb. One of the best Survivor players the last couple of years was Caleb, and he was a crossover from Big Brother. And there's a whole bunch of people on Big Brother that date a whole bunch of people that are on Survivor. So there's a lot of crossover between the two.
Interesting. Okay, so we'll stop boring you with all of our reality TV guilty pleasures. Let's get into the weekend. And for, you know, for those of you who are new or listening to the first time, the way that the format works is we do two Degen and Juice podcasts each week. You know, you'll be able to find them on iTunes, I believe, starting this week. It's, you know, we're still waiting on Apple to process everything. And the first one, we'll look back at the weekend that was, what we learned for the upcoming weekend and, you know, weeks thereafter. And then we'll also get into some of the weekday games. And then the one later in the week, which will always be released on Thursdays, that really dives into the games on the Saturday slate and gets a little deeper, looking at the card from, you know, what mainly what Colin likes. And then I'll chime in as well. So the format for this is we're going to go through kind of a, you know, a lightning round of recap of the weekend. So let me start with, what was your favorite game of the weekend? Just from a, you know, enjoyable, I think I might know where you're going with this, but what game did you enjoy the most on Saturday?
Oh, wow. I have to go with Cowbell. You know, I talked about it all week. I was tweeting out practice reports about Arden Key and Rashard Lawrence. And, you know, even the very first pod you and I cut a couple weeks ago, I talked about how Ed Orgeron as a full-time coach was 10-25, and as an interim coach, I think he's undefeated. So I loved Mississippi State's defense. I love Nick Fitzgerald. I loved everything about this game, it being in Stark Vegas at night, and I was glad to see that pay off.
Yeah, I expected Mississippi State to cover. I mean, I bet them. Nick Fitzgerald's a monster, by the way. I love backing him, but I did not see 37-7 coming. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, a lot of people will blame Orgeron, but in the offseason, a lot of the talks were about the coordinators. And
Matt Canada.
Yeah, I mean, if LSU, here's the thing. If LSU came out and put up 40, right, and then, you know, they rolled, and then the next week they put up 50. Orgeron's not getting credit there, right? That's Canada. Orgeron right. And just whatever. This is the, you know, one of the highest, if not the highest paid coordinator in football. I think on defense, it's what's his name in Oregon, and offense, it might be Canada and LSU.
So yeah, Jim Levitt.
Right? Yeah, I think he's making over $1 million a year. But if LSU offense looked great, Canada would get all the credit. So he has to get some of the blame here for only putting, I mean, their offense looked horrendous. And, you know, that 30, Miss State winning that game outright, not that surprising. By 30, is pretty shocking to me.
Yeah, right. But, you know, not shocking to me because we wrote a Dark Horse Heisman piece, and I threw Nick Fitzgerald in there just because I knew he was, second leading rusher of all the SEC running backs you can think of last year. Nick Fitzgerald was up there in the top three. I mean, passing-wise, it's coming along. And everybody bags on him for the Miami of Ohio Bowl game, but, I mean, Nick Fitzgerald's an all-star.
Yeah, I mean, that kid will just fight for you if you're backing him, too. Really fun player to watch. I would say my favorite game of the weekend, usually your favorite game involves a winner, which mine was, and that was UCLA-Memphis starting off Saturday. That game was back and forth all day, 48-45, a lot of swings. You know, Josh Rosen, who throws such a pretty ball, but he makes some questionable decisions, which, you know, if you throw him in the NFL and he makes, you know, he's throwing across the field, across his body, he's forcing balls, and, you know, I can't get a read on how Rosen is going to translate to the program. I mean, the pro game, he throws such a pretty ball, but he made some questionable decisions in that game. You know, one a pick six and then a pick late, and Memphis held on to knock off UCLA. I think that's the third straight year Memphis has won outright when a ranked team came into Tennessee.
You know, you have to wonder if Rosen is kind of like, if he just, it's kind of like, fuck it, you know, my future is cemented. I mean, I'm going to be drafted in the top one, two, or three picks in the NFL draft. My arm will prove out above anybody. If I want to take a shot here for the game for UCLA, who will be a distant memory, I'm just not sure what his hunger is to win.
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, now that, you know, they have a loss, and you wonder if he's going to shut it down at some point, or if, you know, he's really going to start protecting himself. You know, as far as just getting rid of the ball and, you know, not risking an injury. So that'll be something to keep an eye on. Let's time to pat ourselves on the back before we laugh at ourselves. What was your best call of the weekend?
Oh, easily. It was last week when I wrote Sunday Morning Coffee. I said, I'm taking Minnesota on the opener. I said, Minnesota is going to rush the ball down Middle Tennessee's throat, and Middle Tennessee can do nothing about it. And conversely, Middle Tennessee can't rush the ball, and Minnesota is turning into a pretty pesky front seven. So Minnesota annihilates them.
They just wore them down, right, in the second half.
Yeah, especially. Completely warmed out. 221 yards of rushing for Minnesota. Middle Tennessee State had 46 yards of rushing the entire day. So that was best call.
My best call, I put together a piece that I'm going to do each Saturday, which is the situational six-pack. I went 5-1. Pulled it out of my ass. Don't expect that every week. But I pick two of my FCS calls. And from our segment last week, FCS or no, I had Northern Colorado against Colorado, expecting them to come out flat. Samford against Georgia as well. So my FCS schools really came through for me. My worst call, so it's time to laugh at ourselves, and you can follow me, is Missouri-Purdue. Here's how bad that bet was for me. I played over 78, the worst number you could have played, right? So it closed at, like, I think it opened 72. I played over 78. It closed at 75. There were seven combined points in the second half. And Missouri scored three points. I didn't watch much of that game. I have no idea how that played out, but I don't think I've ever been as wrong as I have been on that game. How about you?
It's the same for me. That we have both had the worst game, but mine wasn't from a total standpoint. I fired on Missouri -7 right away and had no problems with it. I love the fact that Odom fired the defensive coordinator. I read some articles that he was just, there's some sort of cancerous stuff going around with the defense. It had nothing to do with actual X's and O's on the field. It more had to do with the defensive coordinator. So I thought things would get better because Odom was Pinkel's defensive coordinator, and he's been the head coach since. So I thought the defense would do better, and I thought Drew Locke would get his pacing back and start airing it out, you know, like he did a lot of last year and like he did against Southwest Missouri State or Missouri State, whatever they're calling themselves these days. So, I mean, I look at the stats now. 35-3, Purdue wins. Missouri has three turnovers. Purdue has 205 yards of rushing, 272 yards of passing. They won 26 first downs to Missouri's 10. And here's the most shocking stat I read in the entire box score. Missouri had possession of the ball for 16 minutes and 17 seconds of a full game.
That's shocking. I 3 points. I couldn't envision them scoring under, you know, 21, worst case scenario. So yeah,
we did great there, didn't we?
Nailed that game. Absolutely. Just nailed it from every single angle, total side swept it. How about bet regret? So I'll let you know what I mean by that. And I'll mention mine. What are the bets that you either mentioned or that you didn't place, that you wish you would have?
So financially, I have a huge regret on Memphis. And the reason is because when I bet on these games, it's not like, I mean, I know I enter them in the Sports Action app as one unit, and it's a lot of flat, and I'm probably not going to do a lot of twos and a lot of threes. If it's financially a two or three unit play for me, then I'm tweeting a lot about it. Like, I'm tweeting about it all the time, about how big it is for me. But Memphis was something that I only played on a one unit size for myself, even though it was a perfect spot. UCLA's got Stanford this week. It was an early game for a West Coast team. Memphis was trying to sell the place out. It was such a perfect spot for Memphis. But my whole issue was, as I look at it as an investment, I knew that Memphis plus seven was there. I knew Memphis greater than plus seven was there in the game of the years. And I never got around to firing on those. And when I finally did, it was 3.5. And I knew it was not going to stop, and it was going to keep going down. I think I saw some 2.5s before kick. And I think my biggest regret is that I let the fact that the line had lost 3 points of value, 3 to 4 points of value, tell me off from betting more. So that's, you know, I guess live and learn. The spot is the spot, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, but I mean, that line of thinking can help you out in the long run. I know that three that I mentioned last week on the pod, I mentioned the Toledo, a couple weeks ago, I mentioned the Toledo-Tulsa over. I said first of 50. Of course, I played the Missouri over instead. I also mentioned that I thought USC would sleepwalk for most of that game. What a game, by the way, against Texas. And I didn't play Texas. And then Wazoo, you know, I mentioned Oregon State. Their whole secondary was out. I don't know why that line ended up coming back down, but I ended up not playing Wazoo, and I wish I would have, given the matchup and the injuries that Oregon State had. What were your thoughts, a game that I just mentioned, what was your takeaway from USC-Texas? So I've been hearing two different sides from this game. It's either, okay, you know, Texas has some pieces, they're putting it together, or on the other side of that, it's maybe USC, you know, isn't as good as we thought, or were they just flat after Stanford? What did you take away from that game?
Well, I mean, USC's pretty beat up right now. I mean, we're talking, they got a defensive tackle questionable, a linebacker questionable, their defensive end doubtful. Tight end is out. Can't pronounce his name. You know, I mean, USC is beat up. But as for this specific game itself, that's the best Texas defense. From everything I read from every Texas writer, that's the best defense that they've ever played, like that they've seen in years. So I think Texas defensively put up an A-plus effort. And I think it says something about USC being able to pull this one out. Now, the schedule becomes extremely USC-friendly for a while before there's some spots with Utah, Colorado, and then Notre Dame comes. But USC's got to get over these injuries, or they got to do something, because they do not have a bye week. And I tweeted this out right after the game, because I hit 9-1 on USC during last year's national championship game. I took a future on USC, and I said, you know, they can now lose a game. They can afford to completely mail in a game and still get a bye before the Pac-12 championship. And if they win that game, then they essentially get a semifinal game in the Rose Bowl. So what they did in beating Texas is they've allowed themselves to even to give one up later in the year, which I expect them to. But I think Texas played a really good game. I give Texas credit.
Well, let me counter that point of view in that you're saying you're giving Texas a lot of credit on defense, but then how do you explain week one? Is Maryland that good on offense, or was that just an anomaly?
Well, I mean, with Maryland's quarterback out for the year, I guess we'll never know, right?
That's fair. But I mean, do you think that did that? Because I don't think Maryland is a top flight offense, and what they did to Texas. I mean, there was a lot of weird stuff that happened in the game. A lot of times you'll have weird results in week one, but that's, I mean, week two, their defense looked a lot better, and their defense did look outstanding last week. Texas will be an interesting team to keep an eye on to how they respond to this. They can go really one of two ways, because now they're sitting at 1-2, but they can take a lot from that game from a confidence point of view, or, you know, they can say, man, we're 1-2. What a heartbreaking loss. So I'll keep my eye on how Texas responds to this and, you know, how Herman really gets them up going forward.
And definitely my eyes are on USC-Cal this week, because USC goes up to Berkeley as a 17-point favorite. And if they can rebound and just pretend like nothing ever happened and cover this 17 points, then the future that I've got, the 9-1 future I've got, it's going to do okay. But if they stumble against Cal, then we've got some real issues.
Well, I will tell you, I will be on Cal plus 17 if that game is on Fox and Gus Johnson is calling it, because I think that played a factor in that Texas USC game, because it always seems to play out that way when it's Gus late night. So the last thing I wanted to cover before we get into some of the marquee games of the weekend were the three things that you learned this weekend. I can start off. I can tell you that, number one, I've learned that I should really stop betting BYU, and I am thankful that they have a bye this week so I don't have to give my weekly donation. Number two, I learned that Lincoln Riley is a douchebag and Oklahoma is throwing bombs, you know, up 35 with 2.5 minutes to go against Tulane. They had an 87-yard touchdown instead of taking knees. I mean, that Tulane cover hurt, especially since I got a good number at 35. You even had 35.5. And, you know, then Tulane conceded the play before then. They punted it from the Oklahoma 45. The funniest thing is Oklahoma didn't even kneel it at the end with 30 seconds to go, and they fumbled after Tulane punted again. And then Tulane completed a pass, and then it was incomplete in the end zone, and then it was the end of the game. That was just a brutal loss, and I can't believe they were throwing the ball there. Just an absolute scumbag move by Oklahoma. And then the third thing, and the funny thing is I paid for that game. You got to pay for it, so I paid to watch myself lose money. The third thing is San Diego State. We were talking about USF in the preseason as the team that could potentially run the table and, you know, come from the group of five and potentially get into the playoff if there's complete chaos. You know, but given their schedule, given that they've had a conference game canceled, they haven't looked that great to start the year, although they're coming on a little bit. But I feel like I overlooked San Diego State. And looking at their schedule, you know, if they have a really good chance of winning out, and they'll have, you know, much better wins than South Florida will have. They'll have a road win at a, you know, Power 5 team last week in Arizona State. And then they'll have a win over a ranked Power 5 team in Stanford this week. And if you look at their schedule, I mean, their toughest game, and I'm going to be against them this week, is going to be at Air Force this week. Air Force has revenge from that Mountain West, you know, really close loss they had in 2015. But after that, they have Northern Illinois at home, then UNLV. They're home against Boise. I think they win that game. Home against Fresno, at Hawaii, at San Jose State, bye, home against Nevada, home against New Mexico. I mean, if they win at Air Force, that's a good chance they run the table with two Power 5 win. So, you know, I learned that I might have to keep my eye on, you know, if there is complete chaos, what ends up happening with San Diego State. Do you have any comments on any of those games? And then what were the kind of the three takeaways you had from this weekend?
Yeah, I'm not going to comment on OU because that Tulane, that was egregious. And, you know, it gave me shades of Tulane-Duke opener in 2015 where Tulane was taking kickoff returns at the one-yard line and accidentally taking a knee. Felt a little like that. As far as San Diego State goes, I've got a UNLV 30-1 future, and I need them to win the West to pull that off. But these San Diego State numbers are insane. They're number one in time of possession so far this year. They're 15th in third down conversion percentage. They're 12th in sacks, and the only thing knock against them right now is that they're 118th in all of FBS and penalty yards. So, I mean, if they cleaned up their penalty yards, some of the rest of these would probably be even better. But, I mean, they're just lighting up the advanced stats right now. So they're a full team. As far as some of the other things that I saw this weekend, you know, I mean, NCA&T beat Charlotte. Charlotte turned the ball over three times. So, I mean, this is a team that you absolutely cannot trust at any point. I don't care who says. One of the big things that caught my attention was Louisiana Tech beat Western Kentucky. I mean, Louisiana Tech just got housed by Mississippi State by, I think, 50. So, I mean, La Tech beats Western Kentucky. And if you go down that line of thinking, that conference, that puppy is wide open. And I'm telling you, UTSA is solidly putting up wins against Baylor, however much you want to count that. 51 this past weekend for UTSA. I mean, I think Meep Meep has a great shot. They were, 8-1 preseason. But Western Kentucky is not the powerhouse anymore. I think it's wide open there.
Too bad you can't cash that UTSA win total.
That sucks because, you know, I wanted to take the 8-1 on the Roadrunners to win Conference USA, but I knew that they had to go to La Tech. So I liked over 6.5 better. I took the over 6.5, Their game with Houston gets canceled, and that nullifies the ticket that I had with South Point on the over 6.5. So, anyways, the last note I've got to say is Auburn only beat Mercer 24-10. I understand what the spot was after Clemson. I mean, Clemson was also in the same position going to Louisville, and they didn't have any problems. Auburn beat Mercer 24-10 as a 41-point favorite. So, Gus, the seat in the SEC is hot right now. Odom, Gus Malzahn, Bielema, who has way too much of a buyout, Sumlin, who has a pretty hefty buyout. It's insane in the SEC right now.
Yeah, I mean, and then you're talking about you're mentioning the SEC West. I mean, the SEC East is wide open, and it's going to be a close race. It looks like, it appears that Missouri is going to be in the basement, and then you have Kentucky, who's 3-0 with a big win at South Carolina. So I feel like they separated themselves from the Gamecocks. And then Florida, talk about a lucky cover you had for getting the CW9 to a winning record. Their win over, they're laying 5 and they score on a 60-yard Hail Mary as time expired. I mean, the thing with Florida is that people are going to look back and they're looking at this team and saying they're not that impressive, right? But just getting that win with all of the guys that they have out, I think is going to make them a lot stronger if they just keep surviving. And, they're going to get some of those suspended players back, and then they'll have added depth. But the SEC East is wide open as well. I mean, Vanderbilt had a huge win at home. And then they have Alabama coming in this weekend. And Vanderbilt's 3-0 after beating a ranked Kansas State team in an ugly one last weekend. And then you have Georgia, who's dealing with injuries, but has looked pretty good as well. So the SEC outside of Alabama is just wide open.
Yeah,
there are definitely a lot of coaches on the hot seat.
Yeah, we were talking here. I was looking up the Bet Online odds for the first coach to be fired, and in the back of my head, I've thought about it all day. I mean, Bielema is on the list 12-1, but his buyout's too big. Someone's buyout's pretty big, but I think they beat Arkansas this weekend. Butch Jones is 3-2, but are you going to fire him because of what happened against Florida? I think the one on this list, not even Coach O. I think that would happen at the end of the year. The one on this list, I think, is Barry Odom. Because if we're sending defensive coordinators home, we've just had just trouble with the program in general since he's taken it over, just inconsistency. I think Odom is the least safe, and he's currently listed at 7-1. So it's something we can keep tabs on.
Interesting. And you mentioned that NCA&T beat Charlotte as a double-digit dog. I think they were catching 11.5. Two other double-digit dogs actually won on Saturday, one being Northern Illinois, who beat Nebraska in Lincoln, and Tanner Lee threw two pick sixes. I mean, I think we can cash that Nebraska season win total under. They looked horrific. And then the funniest result of the weekend was Idaho State. They were catching 33 at Nevada, and they won comfortably. I mean, the final score was 30-28. They led 30-14 in the fourth quarter. So those were the three double-digit dogs that won, but Nebraska's in trouble.
Yeah, that was nothing like what Howard did to UNLV. Howard had Cam Newton's little brother running wild, and so Nevada's loss to Idaho State is really embarrassing.
Yeah, that was one of the more shocking results of the weekend. So let's just run down the top 25 results from the weekend for any games that we didn't already hit. So, Alabama, I know we both had Colorado State. They didn't cover. Colorado State got in the back door late for us. They won 41-23, pretty comfortable win. But, they gave up 400 yards, some of them garbage time. But there's still some questions with that defense.
I have real problems with their defensive ends and their linebackers. I mean, Alabama's primed. I mean, Vanderbilt's defense can't do – I'm sorry, their offense isn't good enough to beat Alabama. Vandy's defense is pretty good, so they should cover the number. But Alabama can be beaten, period.
Yeah, I mean, they're dealing with a lot of injuries, to be fair. But, yeah, this defense is not the defense that they had last year, which is, historic defense. We covered Oklahoma's win, scumbag cover by the Sooners. Clemson beats us again. I waited to take it live, and that didn't matter. They roll over Louisville. Are they this good?
Yeah, they're number 2 in my power ratings right now. I know everybody's they got the top 25, but my power ratings are what counts. And right now I've got them on a neutral, 3 points less than Bama. So that's how good I think they are.
USC, we covered them escaping in a thriller in overtime, double overtime. I still think Texas, you're lucky to get away with that under, which almost was a huge moose, but I still think Texas should have went for two in the first overtime. Mm-hmm. Penn State rolled. We still don't really know who they are. They'll get a little bit of a test at Iowa this week. We'll cover that later in the week. Georgia State, I'm not taking anything from that game. Michigan looked pretty sluggish. I mean, that game was 19-13 at the end of the third quarter. See anything there?
Yeah, they got into the red zone. This is about to be a play for me. I don't know if it's going to be tonight or tomorrow morning, but I want the 9.5, and I don't have a Pinnacle account, so I'm searching around. But they got into the red zone plenty of times and didn't make it into any points against Air Force. To prepare for Air Force's offense is not an easy thing to do in just a few days. So, Michigan had the opportunities. They just couldn't make it any points, and now they're going up against a Purdue team that has one sack on the entire year. So I love Michigan this weekend.
Yeah, we covered Wisconsin. Well, they rolled BYU. Never really a contest. Oak State just put it on Pitt. Pitt had some chances early on in that game, but they didn't capitalize. And if you don't capitalize against Oak State, you're cooked. That offense is
they are now the leader in all of FBS in yards per play and offense. I think at 8.3.
Yeah, just a terrifying offense to play. Ohio State did what they were supposed to against Army with a 38-7 win. We covered LSU going down by 30. They'll drop in the rankings. Va Tech, pretty funny box score if you look at Va Tech. Mm-hmm. They were laying 26. They're down 17-7 at the end of the first quarter. They go on and outscore East Carolina 57-0 over the last three quarters and cover easily. I don't think there's much to take from there. A game you had was, we mentioned Vanderbilt getting a win over ranked Kansas State at home. Stanford went down to San Diego State. That's now two straight losses for them.
Hold on, before you go any farther. This is like a loser goes home game this weekend, Stanford and UCLA. I mean, Stanford gets their third loss this weekend, or UCLA gets another loss. I mean, I think the loser of this game shuts it down.
Yeah, I would tend to agree, especially with Rosen. I mean, if he loses this game now, I can't see him really trying to risk his future. If TCU, they won, I had SMU in a sweat getting that cover, but TCU put up 56 after a sluggish start. They won 56-36. Should be a lot of points this weekend with TCU of State. Wazoo covered that game. They ended up winning easily 52-23. We covered the Florida thriller and UCLA going down to Memphis. Did you take anything from Florida, Tennessee?
Florida's offense certainly didn't. I mean, there's no new news from Florida's offense. There's no new news from Florida's special teams and their defense. So, I think we'll talk about this later in the week. But this Kentucky point spread is shocking to me. But we'll talk about that in a couple days.
Yep. Can't wait to get into that game. I know a lot of my people down in Lexington are really excited about the opportunity to finally beat Florida. So that wraps up the top 25. Getting into the weekday games, and as I mentioned previously, we'll get into Saturday's card on the podcast we record Wednesday night, which we'll release to you guys on the Sports Action app, also via Soundboom and on iTunes. But as we do each week on part one of the Degen and Juice podcast, we're going to cover the weekday games. So there's one Thursday game. It's Temple at South Florida. South Florida is laying 20.5. They do have revenge from last year. One of the two games they lost, 46-30 at Temple. Very different Temple team last year. Mm-hmm. Do you see anything here?
And a very different South Florida team because Quentin Flowers was hurt that game. True. So this is a big revenge spot. I'm not going to try to be sharp in this game. I'm going to swim with the public and swim with the fishes here. The power rating on this game for me is 19. The S&P Plus is 10, and FPI is actually 15. So there's no matter what power rating you hit, it's going to tell you that Temple with 20.5 is the way to go. The problem is this is a top 10 offense with South Florida against a bottom 10 defense with Temple. So there's no way in the world I'm backing Temple because they could hang tough for two quarters, three quarters. At any point, this thing could get out of control.
Yeah, I have no interest in backing Temple. I think it's USF or nothing there. I'll probably end up staying away. Friday, we have two games. One, the first is Virginia at Boise. I believe this game opened at 14, and I believe it's down to 11-ish at some places. Yeah. Both teams, interestingly enough, have byes the next week, so there's no look-ahead factor here.
Right.
Do you see anything here?
Bronco Mendenhall, you know, former coach of BYU and played Boise a few times previously, got annihilated in this same game last year. And, you know, we don't know the status of Brett Rippon. And, you know, they also questionable is Boise's nose tackle, David Moa, and their offensive lineman, Archie Lewis. So I actually fired on Virginia plus 14 on the Bet Online opener. It only had $250 limits. I actually have this game below 10. I think ESPN FPI has it at about 10. S&P Plus is below 13. So the number has been taken down to 11.5. I would fire on it. I don't think Virginia can win the game straight up, but you won't find me putting a dime on Boise until I know what their floor is, because they've just fallen in the power rating week after week.
Fair enough. And the last game on Friday, the last weekday game, is Utah at Arizona. So again, both of these teams have byes next week, so there's no look ahead factor. Utah beat Arizona last year at home 36-23 in a game that Arizona actually led at the half. Something to keep an eye on in this game is, and I hate that this happened because I'm going to have to pronounce the name, two of Utah's best defenders, Chase Hansen in their secondary, and then Kavika Luafatasanga, they're both questionable. I probably butchered that name. So that's something to keep an eye on. What are your thoughts on Utah, which is a 3-point road conference ranked favorite at Arizona? Are you backing Dick Rod here?
He's been so bad against the spread as an Arizona. As an FBS coach, like the last few years, he's been so bad. I got to do further dive into the game. In my Sunday morning coffee, I released that this should have been Utah minus 2. Currently sits Utah minus 3. A lot of the other power rating systems agree with me. Although if you believe in Brad Edwards and ESPN FPI, he's got this as Arizona minus 7. The one thing to keep an eye on here.
Yikes.
Yikes. You know, don't trust. Yeah. I will get to that for another podcast. So the one thing to keep an eye on here is I know Arizona's schedule to right now is garbage. I know it's complete garbage, but what they're doing on the ground has actually been pretty, I mean, it's eye popping out what they're doing with their rushing attack and their rushes per attempt. And Utah is a top 10 defense when it comes against the rush. So to me, if those neutralize each other, what kind of advantages can I find on the flip side of the ball for both teams? What is Utah's new offense has looked spectacular so far. I thought they'd have a problem adjusting to scheme tempo, but they're actually doing really well. So I got to dive more into this game before I make a decision on it. You know, right now, I don't know. I don't want to say lean Arizona. I hate the word lean, but, you know, I would probably take Arizona right now, but I'm probably going to go back and forth on this one until Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, Tyler Huntley's been super impressive. I mean, he was our leading rusher against San Jose State. Oh, and he also, you know, was 30-for-43, 341 yards and 4 touchdowns. And yeah, I mean, Arizona, you know, Dawkins has been under scrutiny at quarterback for them, you know, for the last few weeks. And then he put it all together. I mean, you know, granted it's against UTEP, but he really, I think, you know, can take a lot from that game. And because of their rush attack and, you know, how good it's been, and how good the Utah rush defense is, that's why I think it's really important to keep an eye on those two injuries in Hansen and Luafatasanga. And so that's a you know, an intro. I think one of the most intriguing, you know, the first really intriguing conference weekday game where, you know, you're going to have the ranked team going on the road on a Friday night, which, you know, usually is a prime spot for an upset. But I think that's a really good game to dive into. So I'll try and get your updated take on that when we record the second podcast on Wednesday night that we'll release to you guys on Thursday. We're also going to have Sports Cheetah on that to get some of his takes, updated takes, through 3 weeks in college football. So we'll catch you guys later in the week, and let's, you know, get ready for CW9 also on Friday, Saturday, six-pack on Saturday. Let's have another profitable weekend. We'll catch y'all later.
Peace out.